Logic, the podcast that brings you lineup construction ideas for the DFS slate to come on FanDuel. I am your host. My name is Sean Kane. I am your loyal servant here. And we are looking at a week 10 of the NFL. This is we're getting into it, man. You know, when you get that Thanksgiving game, that things are kind of, you know, we start to know what's what, and the NFL season is slowly dripping through our hands, but the playoff chase is on, which is going to make some of these games really, really interesting for a lot of these teams. But we got a good slate here, too. Back up to, I believe it's a 12-game main slate, so a lot fewer teams on the bye this week. We get the bye week starting to come to a close after next week. So definitely going to be an interesting week, and I've got the player breakdown for you guys coming at you right now. Hey, want to say thank you. Everybody who's subscribed to the show, everybody who's new to the show, welcome. Listens are up, numbers are up. Why? Maybe because, you know, we're back to NBA season, and that's our bread and butter. If you are tuning in tomorrow, we will have an NBA breakdown for the Friday slate, as we usually do. Look forward to doing that for you guys. Of course, check out lineuplogicdfs.com for any and all content coming at you this week. If you want to get in on the NBA cheat sheets, those will be coming out, as well as the NFL cheat sheet. I mean, there's not really a better time to be a patron of the show. $10, you get the cheat sheet. And you keep the lights on. I gotta be honest with you guys. Like, I do a lot of work. I do a lot of work for free. So if you like this show, please support us. I'll probably do what, 5-6 shows a week. I'm not on salary from any big outlet. I'm not attached to anybody. This is me. The Lineup Logic DFS is me, and then Ryan and Josh and all the rest of the guys, you know, Joe and Mike, all on a volunteer basis. And but this is it. You know, we're not roto anything. We're not anything like that. This is me. So if you like the show, please support us. Patreon.com/lineuplogic. You can even, you know, just support the show for whatever makes it worth your while. But there's a lot of, hopefully a lot of useful free content for you guys, and I'll be working my ass off until the end of the season here. So you can expect more shows just coming at you. I'm going to try to do as many as I can, you know, as many breakdowns as I possibly can. I don't like doing a bad job, but I will make sure that I bring you as much content as frequently as possible. So I appreciate the support. Patreon.com/lineuplogic. Okay. Like I said, man, we got a lot to talk about in NFL Week 10, so let's not waste any time. We went through the game-by-game breakdown. You have a sense of where all the Vegas data lies, what's interesting about each team, where the matchups are going to, who is in a good spot as far as, you know, just the ways teams align here. So let's go ahead and jump straight into the player breakdown. Who do you love? All right, so starting up at the quarterback position, you got two guys who are top price here, Brady and Dak. Dak has Atlanta. He's averaged 21 fantasy points with 227 passing yards on 32 attempts and 24 yards rushing. This guy is elite. I mean, he's an elite fantasy quarterback. In the last six games, he's had over 22 fantasy points in five of those six games. He scored the most fantasy points per dropback. Besides Deshaun Watson, he has, like, I believe it's 0.53 fantasy points per dropback. Watson was at an insane, you know, like 0.7 mark or something like that. So you really got to like him in this spot as a road. Well, let's say this. I prefer Dak as a home favorite, no doubt about it. He has seen much better numbers as a home favorite. And actually, I was reading Matthew Friedman's article in Fantasy Labs about the quarterback breakdown, and Matt mentioned that, you know, his splits as a road dog are not perfect, averaging about 19 fantasy points or 17 fantasy points in that split. That said, Atlanta is 17th in adjusted fantasy points allowed to the quarterback, so they're pretty bad, really. The real weakness of this team is against the running back, and they've been exploited in that way. Quarterbacks really haven't had to score against them. In DVOA, the team ranks 29th overall with 24 and 29 respective grades to the pass and to the run. So, you know, they have an elite cover corner in Desmond Trufant, but that's really been the only strength of this defense. You know, they have some good safeties and stuff like that. Keanu Neal obviously is a great player, and a couple decent rushers, but they have not defended the pass well. They've been pretty inefficient there. So the thing that I like about this game is the high total, competitive game. Atlanta with their backs against the wall as far as their season goes. You know they're going to be aggressive offensively. I think that's going to try to bring out a much more aggressive mentality from Dallas on the road, who wants to keep things going. You know, the one thing I will say is with all the value on this slate, especially at the quarterback position, I think people are going to overlook Dak. And I mean, Dak has a 20-point floor right now, the way that he's playing. Do I love him on the road? No. We still know that he probably is capable of putting up, you know, that minimum 17, 18, 19-point floor in that split. And then you add to the fact that the way that they're playing and the Atlanta defense is playing poorly, you know, you're going to have you could have a potential shootout here. The one thing I will say is if you want exposure to this, it is a really good game for Zeke. We're going to get the Zeke ruling probably by the close of business today. Another Zeke ruling coming out, because apparently I was reading on Twitter, and I can't cite the source and I feel bad about that, but sports journalist, Texas guy, and he was saying that Friday the courts are out. There's a holiday for the courts, and I'm not sure, it's Veterans Day weekend, I believe, so they are out for Veterans Day, so the federal courts are going to be closed. So if we get the ruling today, and it's, you know, negative, then Zeke will sit. But if we don't get a ruling today, then he'll clear. He'll be fine by the close of business today for week 10. So I'd say he's on track to play. He's probably, I would guess it's over 50% chance to play, especially with the way Jerry Jones is throwing a shit fit. Brady versus Denver, I don't mind it. You know, you got to think the Broncos pass defense will bounce back a little bit as a unit. But geez, I mean, they just gave up last week against Carson Wentz. They just gave up, you know, and you kind of can't blame them. I mean, they've been busting their ass and the offense just has not held up their end of the deal. This team is not well constructed. There's not a lot for them to fight for. You start losing in the first quarter like they did it. You know, it's just not fun. They've dropped to 15th in pass DVOA. Brady's on the road. He's super pricey. I don't know. I think the edge is that no one will play him, and he has one of the highest ceilings on the slate. If for some reason the Patriots defense is just absolutely terrible, then fine. But it's Brock Osweiler on the opposite side. I just don't see it. And those points, that box score is deceiving. I mean, they gave up a defensive touchdown on a sack to Nick Foles. The offense really was not that productive. There's a couple field goals for the Denver team against Philadelphia, but not exactly a smash spot for the Broncos offense here. If you want to pivot, this 8K tier or round 8K is really nice. We've got Matt Stafford at Cleveland. The issue I have with Stafford is that he's only gone for more than 20 fantasy points twice this year. I mean, he's been excellent from a volume perspective. 276 passing yards, over 300 yards in his last three games. He's averaging a 72% adjusted completion rate, 0.43 points per dropback. Now, that number is pretty below meh. I mean, that's meh. That's like top 10, but it's not very good. It's like outside the top 10. He's jammed between Jacoby Brissett and Matt Ryan. Brissett at 0.42 and Matt Ryan at 0.45. So kind of not really a great fantasy quarterback as we're accustomed to with Matt Stafford. Now, he can put up numbers. That's the thing about Stafford. We know he has a ceiling. We know he's capable of. He'll get Cleveland at home, which has been a great matchup for passers this year. And he's had some tougher matchup. I mean, Pittsburgh was negative game script, so he threw the ball a lot, but he threw a couple interceptions in New Orleans. That was rough. Green Bay, they couldn't score any touchdowns running the ball, so they threw the ball, and Matt Prater clicked like 18 field goals. This is what scares me about this team, okay? Positive game script, Stafford only throws the ball 43% of the time. This team switches to the rush. Jim Caldwell is perfectly fine squeezing the life out of a game and maintaining the clock, giving his defense plenty of time to rest. They will run the ball a ton when they are leading. And there's no reason to believe that they won't get out to a decent early lead. Now, if what you're thinking, like I'm thinking, is the very distinct possibility that those two touchdowns that they go up again on are passing touchdowns, then all of a sudden, okay, great. We've got 150 yards receiving and two passing touchdowns from Matt Stafford going into halftime, and then fine, they squeeze the ball. You've created a pretty solid floor there for Matt Stafford, but it's really only about a 14, 15-point floor. You really would prefer your quarterback to be in a much more competitive game. The matchup is awesome. The price is really good. Cleveland only allowing 103 passer rating. I mean, only Miami and Oakland are worse. 19 fantasy points per game. Why is that? Well, they don't put any pressure on passers. I mean, you know, they've only been leading for 16 plays this year. 16 total plays. 9 weeks of football, 16 plays the Cleveland Browns have had a lead. The thing that I do like, and the one edge that I will give to Stafford, and part of the reason that I don't mind it, is this. He could be forced into throwing. Their rush defense is so good. They literally allow like 2.1 yards per carry. It's top three in the league. They're unbelievable. Myles Garrett coming back, Jason McCourty coming back. This game could stay a little bit closer than we think. And he could be forced into throwing in the red zone, which I love. You know, that I think is interesting. So I don't mind that part of Stafford. I wonder what his ceiling is. Does he have a 30-point ceiling? Yes, we haven't seen it this year. We saw it in against Arizona, and it was the last really bad pass defense that he faced. So, I mean, Green Bay was bad, but he had two touchdowns in that game. And had they probably put the ball in his hand in a couple of those red zone situations, he probably would have had another one figured out. But they just tried to jam it in with the run, and they just couldn't do it. So, I don't know. Matt Ryan is interesting to me as well versus Dallas. Home favorite, much tighter matchup. Not a better matchup necessarily. But a good matchup. Highest total on the slate. He's a home favorite. He's averaging 22 attempts, 269 yards per game, only 14 fantasy points. But in the last three, he's been over 15. They've been more aggressive. He's taking more attempts. He's taking more attempts down the field. It's just kind of hard to read his matchup with Dallas. I mean, looking at the trends, he's averaged anywhere from like 9 to 40 fantasy points as a home favorite in high total games. So, yes, do you like him? Yes, do you think that Matt Ryan would be a guy who you could trust in a high total shootout type game against a mediocre defense at home? Yeah. And Julio Jones expects to play. I think he's definitely going to play. He played that whole Carolina game, even though he was a little bit banged up. It's his treatment. He's going to play. Their season is hanging in the balance. They're 4-4. They need a win. They have to try to get after that wild card because, you know, the Saints are a buzzsaw right now. I just think, you know, with Matt, he hasn't been that exciting as a fantasy quarterback. He has not been that valuable as a fantasy quarterback, you know, but slightly more valuable than Matt Stafford as far as just points. And you have a much more competitive game and in kind of a similar matchup in which, you know, he's probably going to be forced into throwing the ball more because his defense is going to be giving up more. No doubt about it. It's just, you know, you have seen this guy struggle in so many matchups. You know, I mean, the Jets, even if you don't put up 20 fantasy points on the Jets, I mean, even Tyrod Taylor did that, and he has no rushing floor or anything like that. So it's kind of a weird thing. One guy I'm interested in is Jared Goff. I mean, he's a top 10 fantasy quarterback. He's averaging 0.54 points per dropback. I mean, we just saw Jacoby Brissett have his best fantasy game of the year against the Houston Texans last week. I mean, he is in a much better offense. In fact, the best offense in the NFL from points perspective at home. It's a tough spot for the running game. Todd Gurley may not be able to get a lot done in the running game. However, his floor is very, very clear just because of the efficiency of this offense and his red zone work. And he's just been uber successful. So no reason to necessarily doubt Todd Gurley. It's just a question of, you know, do you want to pay 9.6 for Todd Gurley on FanDuel when you could pay 9.3 for Le'Veon Bell? You know, I mean, I don't know. And Jared Goff, they're favored by 10 at home. We don't really have a lot of data in this split for Jared Goff because they were never favored by that much last year. You know, the Texans are third in most fantasy points allowed to the quarterback. So, I mean, compare. I mean, who do you feel like has a higher fantasy possible output? You're scared about Jared Goff. Yeah, of course you're scared. He's had some bad games, but in good matchups, he's been filthy. And this Houston team just has nothing. They got nothing right now. They got nothing right now. I have no problem saying that. I think you're going to hear some folks talk about if you're pivoting down even again, there's going to be a lot of talk about this 7K, low 7K range. And Ben Roethlisberger versus the Colts is very intriguing. I mean, this guy, you even talk about it. You've got a lot of bad fantasy core. This is why I love playing Dak Prescott, guys. This is why I love playing Dak Prescott in fantasy. You guys, you just look at the overall numbers of all of the other quote-unquote good quarterbacks. They're not that good for fantasy. Dak always is. Like, if you look back at my lineups, I've probably played Dak 6 times this year in my cash lineup. Ben is only averaging 12.6 fantasy points per game. He's a game manager. Ben Roethlisberger at this age is a game manager. There, I'm going to say it. I'm going to say it. He's just trying to get the ball to his best guys and let them work. That means handing the ball off to Le'Veon Bell. That means throwing the ball to, you know, Antonio Brown as often as possible and Juju Schuster-Smith and let him run. And then the defense is good. They in positive game script are 50-50. They're dead split. 50-50. He's only completing 68% of his passes. He has a 1-to-1 touchdown to interception ratio. With some of the best weapons in the game, that just doesn't make sense. I mean, you have 3 absolute burners at wide receiver and the best running back in the NFL and a defense that's top 10. And you guys can't score enough. Like, what? It's Ben's fault. This is a Ben problem. Price is nice. Matchup is great. What's the upside? Is this the game where we see Ben go throw 4 touchdowns? Maybe, but he's not at home. He's on the road, where he's historically had a terrible, terrible 1-to-1 touchdown interception ratio. I mean, I think you can feel good about his floor here, no doubt about it. But, you know, and Vontae Davis is gone. I mean, Vontae Davis has not been Vontae Davis for a long time. But this is a terrible secondary, and these are phenomenal wide receivers. But do they just run the ball straight down their throat and say, we could win this game 21-0. I have no problem believing that the Steelers can cover here, especially coming off the bye. They're healthy. The defense looks great. You know, I don't know. They just haven't been scoring very much. Not a lot of touchdowns for this team, especially in the passing game. Now, McCown, only 10 on the year, by the way. 10 on the year. 10 passing touchdowns for Ben Roethlisberger this year. So it's fine, but you're talking about basically 1 a week. Maybe more. Josh McCown versus Tampa Bay. Now, this is a name you'll probably hear. It's someone you should be interested in, curious about, no doubt about it. Only one team allows a higher completion rate. That's the Raiders. This team's defense is absolutely terrible. The Buccaneers have been absolutely shredded. They're losing pieces left and right. Brent Grimes has been down. We'll see if Brent Grimes comes back or if his wife decides that she wants to, keep him out of the game. I type in Brent Grimes, and the first thing that comes up is Miko Grimes. This person, she's a mess. She can't, I mean, I know she's not going to out here listen to my show, but like the Raiders are furious with her. Okay. So he's going to be back. Okay. But you are missing a ton of other pieces in parts to this lineup as far as the defense is gone. So, I mean, it's not really anything to be worried about. Grimes has been good. He hasn't quite been his same self, but that should take away at least one of the wide receiver options on the outside. However, this is a really good spot. I mean, I just saw a stat this morning. McCown has an 85% completion rate when he's not pressured. The Bucs have the lowest adjusted sack rate in the NFL. They have since week 1. It hasn't changed. They're terrible at getting to the quarterback. Golston is down now. Buffalo is the comp here. And they have a 4.3% adjusted sack rate. They've been really bad at getting to the quarterback as well. And we just saw, we saw what McCown was able to do against them, 20 fantasy points. He's averaging more fantasy points than Ben Roethlisberger and Matt Ryan, 0.48. Points per dropback. I see a pretty solid floor for McCown here. The question really is that do you have a ceiling? He only throws the ball. I mean, he hasn't thrown the ball really more than 30 times per game. And, do they need him to throw the ball? It's up to kind of Fitzpatrick, and that kind of brings me to Fitzmagic here against the Jets. This spot is really tempting too. I mean, he's the cheapest, one of the cheapest starting quarterbacks on the slate, 6,100 versus the Jets. I mean, in your mind, this is a great spot, right? You know, you say to yourself, oh my gosh, backup quarterback starting at home versus the Jets. It sounds great. Jets allowing 19 fantasy points to the quarterback per game. Defense is 21st in DVOA. And Fitz, you know, I mean, from a fantasy perspective, he wasn't great in these last two games, but he was fine in that game against the Cardinals. I mean, he had 22 fantasy points. He threw two touchdowns in that comeback effort against the Cardinals. You know, you're not going to have Mike Evans, though. If you had Mike Evans, I think this line would be very different. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I think Mike Evans is a two-point shift, even with Fitzpatrick as quarterback here. I think it probably helps this game quite a bit, although Vegas is getting to the over. This total has gone up by almost three whole points. So, you know, he's thrown four full touchdowns on 47 attempts, but he's also thrown two interceptions. This is that. That's what Ryan Fitzpatrick is, right? I mean, he is a, you know, he's a risk taker. He's a gunslinger. You know, the Jets allow the same passer rating as the Falcons and the Colts. So there is kind of an edge here that you feel like this is not a phenomenal matchup. It's not a terrible matchup. Mo Claiborne has been really good, and he should probably lock down DeSean Jackson. And so if you're interested in DeSean Jackson, that's what I'm concerned about. I mean, DeSean Jackson against Mo Claiborne. Mo Claiborne has been very good this year, and DeSean Jackson still a difficult target to love. The volume might be there. And in certain situations, you could see McCown getting to him, but he's not a target monster. That's never been his role. You're probably going to see a majority of the work go to the tight ends. Excuse me. You're going to see a lot of the work go to the tight ends. You're going to see AJ Howard. You're going to see Adam Humphries. You're going to see Marquise Goodwin, all those guys. And I think Cutter is also just furious with his starters right now. You know, the bull up BS that he put up with Mike Evans getting suspended, Jameis poking the guy in the head. You know, the way that Doug Martin got benched last week, it's all, I mean, Cutter is that kind of coach too. He's the, like, I don't have any loyalty to you. If you're not going to perform. So who knows what you get out of this offense, really. You got to be careful about that. Eli is really interesting. Okay. Here's the thing. Okay. Here's something to like about Eli. He's only faced one defense ranked below 25 in DVOA this year. San Francisco ranks 25th in DVOA. The only other defense that he faced in 25th in DVOA was the Bucs. He scored 30 points against the Bucs. Now, Odell was there, right? If this Odell was here, this would be a smash spot. The Giants, even though they're terrible, would be you know, heavy favorites on the road here. You know, in the last 3 weeks, he faced Seattle. They're six. Denver, who was much, much higher in the rankings before they got shredded by Carson Wentz. Obviously, you know, I mean, but they won that game, right? I mean, they sat on the ball in Denver and ran the ball with Orleans Darkwell. And the Rams, who were third, they're phenomenal, and they were down the whole game there. San Francisco also, I mean, they're just falling apart on defense. You look at their list of how many people they have on IR and just are – they traded Rashad Robinson. Jaquiss Tartt, the safety, just got put down. Jimmy Ward broke his arm. So all their safeties, they're starting like a couple rookies in the secondary this year. I don't like this team. I don't like this offense. McAdoo is a joke, but Manning is the fantasy equivalent of Ben Roethlisberger this year. And they're both in very similar matchups. Road favorites against really bad defenses. I mean, 0.39 fantasy points per dropback, 12 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, 74% adjusted completion rate. It's the same as Ben Roethlisberger. It's just he doesn't have the weapons. I mean, you're throwing the ball to Evan Ingram and Sterling Shepard with Orleans Darkwell out of the backfield versus Antonio Brown, Juju Smith-Schuster, and Lev Bell. That's the difference. San Francisco also has a terrible sack rate. So if you continue to worry, but by the way, the Giants defense has really not been as bad as far as giving up sacks as they were earlier in the year. I mean, they're nowhere close to like Seattle bad right now or Cincinnati bad. So it's certainly interesting. That, you know, that's it for me. I think, and of these, it's really hard. You know, Matt Stafford is, I think, has the clearest path to floor as far as cash games. Great matchup. We know he's going to throw the ball. So throw first offense when they need to score in game in neutral situations, they will throw the ball. We've seen this team get torched. We've seen the Browns get torched. I mean, Deshaun Watson torched them. And, you know, and snapback should be in a good spot here. He has been in a good spot. So there's a lot of interesting spots. You're going to have to, I think a lot of what you do this week circulates around what you want to do at quarterback. And if you want to punt quarterback and you want to go all the way down into 6Ks, I don't blame you. And I think a lot of people will do that, especially in cash games. There's a pretty clear floor for guys like Eli and Fitzpatrick, who just, you know, are going to have to throw the ball because they're on bad teams and, you know, against not that great a defense. I mean, the Jets are much better than the Niners. Let's be very clear about this. The Jets defense is much better than the Niners defense. The way the Jets have played as a team just is better. They're just a better team. They're much more respectable. Their offense can stay on the floor. Their offense can score. They can stay in games. You know, I mean, the San Francisco just, there's nothing there, and they're all hurt. So it, you know, it's not good. Moving on to the running backs. Yes. Todd Gurley. I love Todd Gurley. Obviously, 9,600 on FanDuel. He's in a great matchup. This offense is so productive. He should get the positive game script. The question that you have is what he did last week, you know, against the Giants defense. Is that kind of all they need him to do again this week? You know, he had what, you know, 90 total yards from scrimmage maybe and a touchdown, and they pulled him in the fourth quarter to keep him healthy. I mean, this Houston team, I mean, I don't really see, I know that the DeAndre Hopkins still gets targets, you know, narrative is out there. DeAndre Hopkins still got targets against one of the worst pass unit in the NFL. I mean, Tom Savage could see that he was open and he still wasn't able to hit him, you know, and now all of a sudden enter one of the best pass units in the NFL. You take away DeAndre Hopkins from this offense, and there's really not much to like. Tom Savage is going to be under way more pressure than he was against the Giants. It's just not a good matchup for Houston, and I think the positive game script for Gurley is really nice. The price, though, is not as nice. It's hard. I mean, could you jam him in? Yeah, you can. There's enough value on this slate that you can go team jam him in, and you can go left Bell, Todd Gurley, no doubt about it. But then, you know, you're compromising on a bunch of running backs that have a massive, massive floor and opportunity as well. You know, in Zeke and Fournette and all of these other guys. Running back is just loaded this week. I mean, I feel like it's been loaded every week, but you start to kind of cross names off your list because there's little things. And so I'll try to create little things that if they stand out to you, I'll make the argument for players, but I'll be a little bit of, you know, a Debbie Downer here. Debbie Downer. Remember that SNL sketch? The Debbie Downer SNL sketch? If you haven't ever seen that, just type in, go to Google SNL or YouTube, SNL Debbie Downer. It was a great sketch. Yeah, I'll try to be a Debbie Downer with everybody, okay? So you get a little sense of what you want to say. Ah, that matters to me, Sean. That I find important. I think that's what crosses him off the list for me. In general, and this is kind of my approach to NBA, in general, this is the way I like to think about it. When in doubt, go after bad teams. Like last night I was like, interesting. TJ Warren versus the Miami Heat or James Johnson versus the Suns. Okay. Fuck, the Suns are terrible. James Johnson. No, okay, that's it. Okay, that's all the analysis I need. it worked out. You know, it's just that it's silly, but it's true. All right. So here we are. Lev Bell versus Indianapolis, no doubt about it. Positive game script. He could see 30 carries. That's great. That's great, Bob. You know, he is the only running back that has 100% of a team's red zone work, which is unbelievable. If you think about it, 100% of their red zone goal line work. Colts are 27th in DVOA, 21st to the rush. So not the worst rush defense in the world, you know, not allowing a massive success in the red zone. They've actually been decent down there. And we've seen some running backs struggle. But Bell is not just some running back. I mean, he's not an average running back in this situation. You know, he has a 20-point floor here, no doubt about it. He did it last year. The one thing I will say is if the Colts are good at anything on the defense, it's definitely their rush defense. It's better than their pass unit. You know, if you want to exploit this defense, I will say, this is my Debbie Downer moment. Antonio Brown may be the way to do it. And they're almost the exact same price. You know, they allow the highest explosive pass rate in the NFL. And last year, Brown went for 2 touchdowns and over 100 yards. We've seen this past team, Vontae Davis has been released. You're going to have a bunch of rookies starting back there. He's going to have a massive advantage here. He's 10 targets per game. The question you have to ask yourself, you're going to want one of them. Who do you prefer, Bell or Brown? Bell or Brown? You know, obviously, Lev Bell's, he's in a phenomenal spot. And I'm not going to ever doubt the possibility for 30 carries of Lev Bell against a bad team. No doubt about it. But, you know, one of the things that I will say is if you look at the O-line, D-line matchup here for this team, the Indianapolis is not bad at yards before contact. They're very average. They're 1.75 yards before contact. They only allow, you know, and on paper, Indianapolis. Yeah, 1.5 yards before contact. So they actually, as far as PFF is concerned, this is not a plus matchup for Zeke. And you know, I mean, the thing is that this defense as a unit is so bad that they're still hemorrhaging points to the running back. They're still allowing 23 fantasy points to the running back, which is just as bad as the Niners and the Bucks and the Pats, all those bad defenses. Because, you know, the reality is you're a bad pass unit, you're a bad defense in this league. If you're a bad pass unit, you're a bad defense. It's how it works. I don't care how good you are at stopping the rush. You're not going to contain fantasy running backs if you are a bad pass unit because you're allowing success to the quarterback and this is a passer-driven league. That's it, period. Quarterbacks are successful against you, you're going to lose. Zeke versus Atlanta. This is really, really interesting. I mean, this team is terrible against the rush. 29th in DVOA to the rush, 21 fantasy points allowed to the running back this year. Second in red zone workload to Bell. Second in touchdowns, total touchdowns to Todd Gurley. He scored 5 rushing touchdowns in the last 3 games on 86 total carries. What? Holy volume. I mean, just unbelievable volume for Zeke on the ground. He hasn't been catching the ball. They haven't needed him to, really. That's not a look that they're using for him. Except for that, you know, 80-yard touchdown that he did against San Francisco. He can still do it. You know, plus matchups. He's been twice on the road. He's on the road again here. Doesn't matter. 92% of snaps last week. There's really not any reason to not trust the workload here. You know, they're really, you can't necessarily say that there's any reason that this workload isn't going to be there. And we look at what Atlanta has allowed to running backs. You know, I mean, they allowed Jay Ajayi's biggest game. They allowed a decent game to the Jets running backs. You know, they allowed a decent game to LeSean McCoy. You know, they are not a great rush defense, and have they faced an elite offensive line that can create a lot of yards before contact? The answer is no. I mean, they have not. Their front seven has not faced an offensive line this good. I mean, the Cowboys are an offensive line that ranks, I believe they're top 5. I'm pulling it up right now. Not going to guess. It is, yeah, Dallas is top 4. Now, Atlanta faced Green Bay, and we were all in on Tymont that week, and Tymont had a decent week. But, yeah, I mean, he had 10 carries for 35 yards and a touchdown, you know, in that week. They just didn't run the ball that much in that game because they were a negative game script, and Rodgers ended up throwing it a lot. So it's, you know, but Tymont also caught 6 receptions for 75 yards and a touchdown in that. So that they were very clear about how they were going to use him. That was the only offensive line that they had faced that even grades close to the one that the Cowboys read. But, you know, I was talking about this a couple weeks ago. The Cowboys line, maybe not the same. Well, they're rounding into form. I mean, they've been absolutely filthy. They are 3 in power success. They are 4 in stuffed rank. They're 11th in second level. They're 9th in open field, which is one of the most consistent, like, top 10-ish type across the board grades. I mean, New Orleans, New England, not even that close in those, you know, in running back yards there. So Dallas's offensive line has just been a behemoth. They really, really are rounding into form this late in the year. So I just don't see. I mean, they haven't. The front seven hasn't seen a unit like this. They really have not. And if you look at the defensive numbers for the, you know, like I said, defensive efficiency, Atlanta still against all these shit rushing offenses and mediocre offensive lines, 29th in DVOA to the running back. It just, you know, if Zeke is in the game, he's going to get upwards of 25 carries. You know, they're on the road. They're dogs. You still are going to feed Zeke, you know, and Atlanta's front seven. Yeah. I mean, the advantage is across the board. Now their safeties, their linebackers are pretty decent. So the open field stuff is not there. They're not allowing a lot of explosive plays, but in the trenches, it's just brutal. I mean, 29th in power success, 23rd in the stuffed rank, 19th in second level. So, I mean, you just have a massive advantage here. For Dallas's offensive line, and you gotta really like this spot for Zeke. I just don't see any reason not to like this spot for Zeke, especially if he's healthy and he's cheaper than the studs. I mean, he's below 9K again on FanDuel. Zeke versus let me just reread all the Zeke segment notes. Fournette versus the Chargers, 8-6. He hasn't played in 3 weeks. Weird, huh? Coming into this week, his last 2 weeks, though, he had 23 touches with more than 130 yards, three total touchdowns in both. He's healthy. the question is he going to be in the doghouse with Marone? I don't know. Any Jacksonville fans out there, did you see Fournette come forward and say, you know, I apologize? People are saying it was just because of the photo. Apparently, he also missed treatment and showed up late for game day. You fucked up, man. You missed treatment, especially. They've invested how many millions of dollars in you, and they know you have a busted ankle and a busted foot, and you don't show up for treatment? I'm going to sit your ass, too. I don't know if you're healthy. That's no joke. Like, you don't miss a doctor's appointment when you are worth that many millions of dollars to a business. You know? I mean, I don't mind that call. I don't think it was just the photo. The photo thing was, you know, hyperbole. They prove they can win without him, which, you know, hey, don't let it go to your head there, Fournette. He's healthy. He's in a good spot. You know, Chargers, 22 fantasy points per game to the running back, 26th in rush DVOA. Last time they played a team, that ranks this poorly against the rush, it was the Rams, and he went for 20 fantasy points. So I think that's the floor. I think if you get in positive game script, which I do think they will, if they're able to limit the pass offense, I mean, the Chargers have struggled to produce as an offense when they're up against good pass defenses. I mean, they struggled to produce against a bad pass defense in New England. They're on the road, West Coast to East Coast here. You know, they struggled to produce, even though they smashed in that Denver game, they struggled to produce passing yards. They struggled to produce passing offense, and I think they're going to struggle here. So, this Jacksonville defense is just next level. It is unbelievable right now. So there's a very clear floor for Gurley here in a positive game script. The question that you really got to ask yourself, is he going to be in the doghouse? Is he going to see 20 carries? And, you know, what are those 20 carries worth? Are you paying for, you're paying for a stud, right? You're paying for a guy who you hope gets you Zeke level production, right? Not a lot of passing work, but all the rushing work. You know, it's not Lev Bell level production. Let's be clear about that, because there's only two guys on this slate. Lev Bell, Todd Gurley are the only two guys on this slate who will do the rushes and the passing down work. Well, now LeSean McCoy, but he's in a tough spot. So it's very complicated to me to feel perfect about Fournette in this situation. But hey. Don't come at me if on Sunday he has 28 fantasy points, because that's in his range of outcomes, especially against this bad rushing defense. We've seen Kareem Hunt blow them up, and that was the last really good running back that they faced. I mean, the Chargers, you know, they faced Denver, but that whole offense is brutal because you can't do anything in the rushing. And the Chargers, like I said, the last good running back that they faced the Patriots, and that was a committee. They faced the Broncos. They didn't score because they have a terrible offense. That's the end of that sentence. The Giants, I mean, Darkwa and Gallman did fine against them. The Chiefs, that was the last good game for Kareem Hunt. That was the last one, okay? Ajayi had a big game, too. So there's no reason not to like Fournette's situation, except for that if you're nervous about whether or not he's in the doghouse and whether or not he's going to get limited work. Moving on down here, LeSean McCoy immediately popped to me when I was looking at this slate. I was like, oh, baby, 8,300, LeSean McCoy, this is great. New Orleans, big total, one of the better matchups on the board. High total is a home dog. They're going to need him. He's going to have to be productive. He just had a dud. Yeah, great. The Saints are allowing 22 points per game to running backs in PPR scoring, which is what we're concerned about with McCoy because we know we have so much receiving volume. 20 points per game. So, you know, that's a pretty good floor for McCoy, and they're running the ball plenty. I mean, his workload is safe. He's top five in touches, nearly 24 per game, 0.71 points per touch in PPR. What I'm struggling with is his performance when Tyrod struggles. When this offense isn't in a perfect spot to move the ball effectively, McCoy isn't going to be that great of a play. We saw him as a great play against Tampa Bay. We saw him as a great play against Oakland. What do those two teams have in common? I mean, you're going to say it to yourself right now. You know that those two defenses are absolutely freaking terrible. They really, really are. I mean, and you're talking about two defensive lines that are just some of the worst in the, or defensive units that are some of the worst in the NFL. And Buffalo's offensive line has not been that good. So there's a lot that I really, really like about everything. You know, the volume is there. He's at home. You want Shady at home. It's a high scoring game. The New Orleans, you know, New Orleans allows plenty of yards per carry. They can get in trouble. You know, but this team defense is good. They're eighth in overall DVOA. You know, they are currently the fourth ranked pass defense in the league. Now they're 28th against the rush, but the times when he has succeeded, it's because you've gone after the 31st and 32nd worst pass defenses in the league in Tampa Bay and Oakland. And what you have there is you have a situation where they don't have the luxury, teams don't have the luxury of covering well a running back out of the backfield, so you create a much better receiving floor. And you have Tyrod capable of actually hitting his wide receivers. I mean, against the Jets, who... The Jets are 21st in overall DVOA. They are 21st in pass. They're 18th in rush. LeSean McCoy was completely invisible. And this is a mediocre defense that they played. He was completely invisible. You can chalk it up to just an absolute, you know, an anomaly of a game. But I think that the trend for me that I'm reading, and I'm reading it in a very, very small sample size, I have, you know, that is absolutely the case. The trend that I'm reading, if we look at this, if Tyrod is going to struggle, LeSean McCoy is going to struggle. Okay, listen to these numbers. Carolina, good pass defense. 12 rush attempts, 9 rush yards. Yikes. Denver, good pass defense. 14 rush attempts, 21 yards. Now, he caught 7 balls for 48 yards there. And in the Carolina game, he caught 6 balls for 34 yards. So you are creating about 10 points with that receiving work in those games. No doubt about it. And that's great. You know, nearly 10 points over, you know, probably what, in the 7-8 point range in the, on FanDuel scoring? More on DraftKings, obviously. And a lot of this can be undone by DraftKings. But his best games came against the worst pass offenses that he has seen, Tampa Bay and Oakland. And that makes sense because, guys, if you can succeed as a passer in this league, the offense is going to succeed. His offensive line has not been good. They are allowing a massive pressure rate. They're one of the worst in adjusted sack rate in the NFL. It makes me nervous. We saw them absolutely shut down the entire Bucs offense. You know, that's what I'm really, really struggling with. So Tyrod has been excellent. He's been efficient. He's about the rushing floor. I like him in this spot. I think this is good to be a competitive game. I'm just concerned about investing in McCoy in kind of what seems to be a less than sure thing. It doesn't feel that way. So, their offensive line, sorry, here are the numbers on them. 22 in rush blocking, 31 in pass protection, allowing a 21% sack conversion rate. So on pressures, they allow 21% of those pressures to go for sacks. That's not good. It's not good. It's terrible. I mean, that's why they're 31 in adjusted sack rate. So that's what you worry about with McCoy in this situation, is that the New Orleans defense is just too dangerous. And I think people still think of them as a bad defense, and they're just not that bad. Jordan Howard versus Green Bay. This is interesting. 7,200 on FanDuel. And let's be clear, he's a FanDuel player. Dude has hands that are made of bricks. Brick hands, brick house. He's getting the 20th ranked defense in DVOA. They're allowing 23 fantasy points per game to the running back. He is tied with Leonard Fournette for red zone work. He's right behind McCoy in total touch volume. The problem is his offense. He hasn't scored in a month. Okay. But he's kind of gone through a string of relatively tough matchups, okay? Carolina, Baltimore, New Orleans, Minnesota. What do those teams have in common? Great pass units. Great pass units. And this is the same thing. If you have a bad pass unit, your team is going to succeed against them. So one of the best in the league in yards per carry, a great offensive line in yards before contact. They run the ball at any time of day, they will run the ball, no doubt about it. Green Bay allowing plenty of red zone success to the running back. So I feel like this is a Jordan Howard, if you're very comfortable saying this, 24 carries, 110 yards, a touchdown. What is that? 18 fantasy points. Fine. That's fine for what you're getting. It's projectable. It's clear. It's not sexy. It's not. It really isn't. But coming off the bye, fresh legs, the offensive line is healthy, they're at home, division rival, all of those things. Now, Green Bay's DVOA tells a little bit of a different story than their fantasy points, okay? And, you know, the thing about it is that they're, from a DVOA perspective, they are ranked 11th against the rush. They have been good against the rush. The problem with that is that they're still allowing massive production to the running back from a fantasy perspective. Bad pass defense. A bad pass defense that's even more banged up. Morgan Burnett is out, and they lost Brian Bulaga on their offensive line. So how effective is their offense going to be? I don't know. I mean, Brent Hundley is fine, but the Bears defense is good. Let's just say it. The Bears' defense is good. They're top 13 unit right now. They're just as good as the Cincinnati Rams. Or Cincinnati Rams. Who the fuck are the Cincinnati Rams, Sean? Good gracious. They are just as good as... Yeah, I mean, they're flirting with, like, the same ranking as someone like, you know, Detroit, Philadelphia, the Rams. Or not the Rams. Not even close to the Rams. The Cincinnati Rams. The Cincinnati Bengals. Good gracious. Buffalo, they're better than Buffalo. That's the neighborhood that the Chicago defense is in. That's where you need to categorize them as. If you're categorizing them from an advanced metrics perspective, that's where they are. That's where we should place them. So, I don't mind it. Moving down below the Howard tier, you go into the 6Ks. Up in the 6Ks, you have like, I got five running backs that I have to talk about. This is going to be a long show. Put it on 1.5x. Okay, just click it up on your iPhone. You go faster. Ingram and Kamara versus Buffalo. Kamara has surpassed Mark Ingram in price. That's ridiculous. But it's true, because touchdowns are worth more in FanDuel, and he scored more touchdowns than Mark Ingram. This is the problem. Mark Ingram's ceiling came right after that bye week, after they cut Adrian Peterson, and he said, he's going to be a bell cow. Oh, great. He got 24 carries. He got 20 touches. Let me just actually read the numbers for you. They've been slowly in decline, which is infuriating for me as a Mark Ingram season-long owner. But here we go. Ready? Detroit, 30 touches. Green Bay, 26 touches. Chicago, 24 touches. Tampa Bay, 17 touches. And what's happening there? Alvin Kamara is going way up. Alvin Kamara has gone from 14, 14, 11, 6. It's not as dramatic as the drop. 14, 14, 11. Sorry. That was a little bit too dramatic. Anyway, point is that he went up to 16 touches. So Kamara's work hasn't really changed, to be honest with you. But he's getting now probably 15 touches, 16 touches, and Ingram will probably get 17, 18 touches, right? That's what you worry about. He's still the lead rusher. He's still probably the lead rusher in this backfield, no doubt about it. I think it's the move, though, for Peyton to keep these guys healthy, to keep defenses guessing. You put them both on the field. You just share the workload late in the season. You keep them healthy for a postseason run. The Buffalo rush defense is fine, you know. I mean, I don't really know that I would pick either of these guys. The thing is they're just priced too inexpensive for one of the best offenses on the slate. That's the hard part. So I think that they're tournament viable. Carlos Hyde should always be in the conversation here. The Giants have not been a good defense. They're bottom 25 in the league. He has one of the best market shares in the NFL. He had 9 receptions last week. Receptions. 9 receptions last week against Arizona, which is a much tougher rush defense, much tougher defense than, not much tougher necessarily, but tougher than the Giants, right? Currently 7th in all overall running back touches. He's facing a New York defense that is 24th in DVOA, specifically 21 to the running back in PPR. He's going to struggle when this offense struggles. I mean, that's the hard part about Carlos Hyde. His volume is there. They trust him. Beathard loves him. He's going to get the touches. They don't score touchdowns. That's what you worry about here. Will he score touchdowns against the Giants? Maybe. Yeah, I don't know. Janoris Jenkins is back, though. So I'm not really sure he gets in the end zone. I'm not sure how he'll get the snaps, touches, etc. I do love McKinnon. Jerick McKinnon versus Washington. There is no team that allows more explosive rushes than the Redskins. McKinnon is probably one of the fastest running backs in the NFL. His numbers are insane as far as his measurables. He's like 99th percentile in everything. He's flirted with 20 touches in the last 4 weeks. He's gotten 3 games where he's over 24 fantasy points in 4 weeks in the last month. The one game that's the exception is against Baltimore when we saw big old Latavius Murray. He just kind of bumbled on through the brambles there, trudging along very slowly. The Skins are decent at run stopping, okay? But McKinnon has survived much tougher matchups, and he went up against Chicago, Green Bay, Baltimore. We know Baltimore's kind of a lopsided affair. Cleveland also lopsided. Point being is that Washington, I've said this before, I think they're playing above their pay grade. I'm sorry, Josh. Josh, I hate to say this, but I think they're playing above their pay grade. Listen to some of these rush numbers. 4.2 rush yards per game, 4.2 yards per carry allowed, 22nd in the league. Seeing 110 rush yards per game, that is 16th in the league. Allowing 5.4 rushing first downs a game. I think this defense is playing slightly above their pay grade in this situation. And I think Jerick McKinnon might be the one that actually busts this thing wide open. You know, let me whisper something to you guys. Thomas Rawls had his best game of the year against the Redskins last week. I don't know if you wanted to know that. Not sure if you wanted to know that. Devonta Freeman, very, very, very nice spot for Freeman. 6,500 is just too cheap for a beast of a back versus Dallas. He's a home favorite, high total, insanely low price. The issue is the workload. Dude has not touched the ball more than 20 times since the Buffalo game. You gotta love Devonta Freeman. The man has averaged over 4 yards per carry all season long, even when you don't give him the ball. This offensive line is top five in rush efficiency. They are filthy. They move people around, and they allow Freeman to be especially good. They are one of the best rush. They're top 10 in rush efficiency from a run blocking perspective, creating 4.5 adjusted line yards, 4.67 running back yards per touch. That's the highest on the slate. There is no running back. There's no offense that creates, even New Orleans doesn't create as many running back yards per touch. Jacksonville is just ahead of them at 4.68. Just ahead of them, Fournette. So I have no idea why they've gotten so far away from the running game, but they have. You know, a lot of the market share has gone towards Julio. They've been in negative game script. New England, fine. Negative game script, right? Carolina, negative game script. The Jets, they were actually... They were a negative game script in that game. You see, the Jets are respectable, guys. Don't scoff at the Jets. Don't roll your eyes at the Falcons for that. The Jets are respectable. Put some respect on their name, okay? Now, Freeman is really in a good spot. Dallas allows 2-plus yards before contact. The Falcons are earning 2.2 yards before contact. That is one of the best marks as far as PFF grades go. And the Cowboys have only faced other two offensive lines like this year, okay? Denver is close in C.J. Anderson's smash. That was the last good C.J. Anderson game at home, right? The only other two lines that are good that they face like this were the Rams and the healthy Packers. The healthy Packers were a good offensive line. That was the Aaron Jones game. You remember that? 130 carries, 2 touchdowns. I remember that. Rams, Todd Gurley in Dallas. You remember that? That was a 2-touchdowner too. Look it up. Good fronts against this team do work. They do work. And I talked about this last week. Kansas City struggled. They struggled. Their offensive line is ranked 22nd in the league, and they just didn't give the ball to Kareem Hunt. They just didn't do it. They just chose not. He got like 9 carries, even though he was actually pretty effective. They just did not give him the ball. He had 9 carries for 37 yards. He still had 4 yards per carry, but for whatever reason, negative game script, nobody wants to run the ball anymore. I think that Devonta Freeman is in a really, really, really good spot here. You got to love the price. You got to love the matchup. Hold on. Someone is texting me about Ezekiel Elliott. Pause. Bum, 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 bum. I don't have a breaking news. sound, but I just found out from a friend who doesn't even like football. He just started texting me, repeatedly text, and my phone is just and he's like, what is this suspension about? I don't even know. All I see is Ezekiel Elliott news everywhere. What is going on? Suspended again. He's suspended. They've suspended his injunction. He is not going to play. Hey, that narrows down the slate, gang. Really does. Okay? You have some cheap options here. You got yourself some... What's his name? What do you call this fella? The old Alfredo Morris. Fettuccine. Let's go, Fettuccine. The problem with that I have with Alfredo is that Orleans Darkwa is $200 cheaper, and we know that he's going to get all the work. Who knows? I mean, Rod Smith could come out of nowhere. Darren McFadden could come out of nowhere. Anyway, let's continue to talk about Devonta Freeman because, as Twitter says, unless I see Ezekiel Elliott in street clothes at kickoff, I'm still not going to believe this. Jerry Jones is probably throwing a shit fit right now. Go bet the Cowboys game, by the way. Go bet Atlanta to cover. It's going to be interesting. All right. That might be kind of fun. Speaking of Fettuccine, we were just talking about Devonta Freeman. Great matchup, obviously. Great offensive line. Love this spot for him. Fine. Great. Okay. Maybe now they get to run the ball too, because they'll be in positive game script with no Zeke. I don't know. I mean, the offensive line is very, very good, and the Atlanta defense is bad. Orleans Darkwa, man, 5,300. If you want to spend down on a running back, go to Orleans Darkwa. They give up 150 rushing yards in San Francisco to an old man named Adrian Peterson. 2 weeks before that, they gave up Zeke's biggest week of the year. Dark was averaged 5 yards per carry. I can't make that up. Why has not Ben McAdoo played him? That was a poorly worded sentence. I don't know. Ben McAdoo, bad coach. Probably not an interesting person. Not someone that I would want to necessarily talk to. Unless I wanted to ask him about why he keeps changing his hairstyle. He's only seen more than 15 touches twice. Once against Denver. That makes sense. It's the best rush defense in the league. And last week against the Rams in negative game script. I don't know. If you get good game script, maybe he gets 20 touches. He could do really well. He seems to be good, and it seems like the offensive line knows what to do. They don't have a lot of other offensive tools and options. Their season is in the tank. They're on the road in San Francisco against a defense that literally has 17 different offensive starters injured. Feels like a good spot for Darkwa. 5,300? I mean, why not? What does he need to get you at 5,300? Needs to get you... I mean, could he get you the Jordan Howard line, 110 and a touchdown? Probably. Yeah, I mean, you know, I mean, he's probably going to get at least those 15 or 16 carries that he got against the Rams. He did 78 yards there. He just didn't get in the end zone. But maybe they run the ball. Maybe they just decide to run the ball. I have no idea. That's the problem. You don't know what the Giants are going to do because Ben McAdoo is a crazy man with weird hairstyles. Wide receiver. Here we go. Antonio Brown versus Indianapolis, 27 points last year here. I remember I was a little bit banged up on Thanksgiving, watching the game, watching my lineups going, yeah, let's go AB. Where's that red wine? 34% of team targets, only 3 touchdowns. Weird, but he's averaging 11 targets per game. He's seen 10 targets in his last 3 games, which pile positive game script for them. Colts allow the most explosive pass plays in the NFL. Only downside on this offense is there are too many mouths to feed. And who is doing all the feeding? Ben Roethlisberger, who just can't throw touchdowns this year. We said 10 touchdowns, 9 interceptions. I mean, not 5 of those interceptions came against one team, but whatever. You know, targets are at 10, pretty consistently 10 targets. You're probably going to see a touchdown for him. Question is if this is not a competitive game, if Juju Smith-Schuster goes for 197 yards and a touchdown again, and Le'Veon Bell gets 36 carries, does Antonio Brown need to do anything? Or is the reverse? Is it Antonio Brown all of a sudden goes for 2 touchdowns instantly, and the other guys don't have to do anything? That's the hard part about this offense, is you have so many explosive players that it could really almost make the other players really, really hard to roster. But he has the best matchup advantage as far as PFF is concerned. He's massively interesting on this slate, especially when you have a lot of running back depth, to be able to get a guy who's really, really trustworthy like Antonio Brown. I don't think it's ridiculous to say he's still going to get 10 targets. He still has very, very high touchdown upside in this situation. We know how bad Indianapolis's defense is. We know that they're actually halfway decent against the run. They probably force a couple third down situations, and then Antonio Brown will be able to go to work. So it doesn't bother me. Julio versus Dallas, he's still cheap. He wouldn't be this cheap if he caught that touchdown. Guys, the workload is there. It's there. Please. Okay. Last 3 weeks, 31 targets in 3 weeks. That's Antonio Brown level volume. Okay. Twice over 12 targets. He's going to get one of the best matchups on the board against this Dallas secondary. Jordan Lewis grades out pretty mediocre. We saw Davante Adams smash him. And, you know, I mean, Davante Adams is good. Who's better? I don't know. Probably Julio Jones. You know, I think that's the comp here. And if you're a Julio truther, or if you've been burned too many times, I don't know, you know, hey, I understand. I get it. But this is a really, really good matchup for Julio Jones in a positive game script at home. He still hasn't had that game this year. And he can, and he will, and this would be a great time to do it. So, why not invest in one of the better receivers in the game at only 8K, who's getting double-digit targets at home as a home favorite against a team that just lost their star running back? AJ Green, mad AJ Green narrative. Who wants to get in on the mad AJ Green narrative? I just raised my hand. If he really gets a Dory Jackson, the rookie, I like his chances. Jackson's been fine, but he's still being targeted 20% of routes. He's allowed 0.3 fantasy points per route. Green has only been this cheap once. Dropped below the 8K range once. Okay. Last, remember that spot when he was up against Green Bay and he smashed? Okay. Tennessee, notably better against the wide receiver one this year versus the wide receiver two, ranking 10th versus 29th. They're probably going to shift some help over the top to make sure that AJ is, you know, not a problem for them. But listen, we've seen the best wide receivers on teams actually do work against this team. Okay, so listen to some of the lines that have been posted by elite wide receivers against this defense. DeAndre Hopkins, Doug Baldwin, Michael Crabtree, Amari Cooper, slash, because they're just kind of one thing. I call them one. They're just one. One wide receiver, one. Baldwin, 10 targets. 10 receptions, 105 yards, touchdown. Hopkins, 10 receptions, 105 yards, touchdown. Cooper and Crabtree, 11 receptions, 125 yards, touchdown. They shut down T.Y. Hilton. However, that was one of Brissett's first road starts, okay? And he got Logan Ryan out of the slot, who's definitely their best corner. And Moncrief had his best game of the year over there. And he dropped a touchdown. He had 75 yards and dropped a touchdown. Moncrief had his best game on the outside there. So I think AJ Green is in a really, really good spot here. I think he'll probably be popular, but he won't be overwhelmingly Antonio Brown popular. And here's a deep dive for you. You ready for this? Right before the fight with Jalen Ramsey. And this is really funny because Cincinnati beat reporters, and shout out to Cincinnati beat reporters for just being AJ Green stands. There was a whole blog post about how Jalen Ramsey's actually soft and AJ Green doesn't deserve this BS, which I love. Like, just go straight after him. Like, no problem with that. Like, fan the fire. Absolutely. You know, Jalen Ramsey, you're the problem. AJ Green is not the problem. Totally into it. Cause Jalen Ramsey just totally, you know, I just call him soft. I got under his skin. Oof, man, you are asking for somebody to hit you in the teeth. Like, you don't just, what's up? Why not a low profile? I'm just not a fighter. Anyway, right before the fight, literally the play before the fight, AJ beats Ramsey dead to rights, and he is going down the sideline, and Dalton just missed him. He threw the ball out of bounds, and AJ went onto the paint and had to catch it, and he caught it, but he ended up in the lap of he caught the ball standing up, but he ended up in the lap of a cameraman because that's where fucking Dalton threw the ball, but he was beat. AJ Green was clean. He was clean beat by Jalen Ramsey, so I think that has a lot to do with the fact that they got into it, because after that, Jalen Ramsey started jawing at him, and AJ Green got back after him. So, you know, it's AJ's matchup proof. An angry AJ, mad AJ. I think this is a pretty interesting spot, you guys. I think it's a very interesting spot. You want to pivot. I don't mind Dez. I think people will probably fade Dez. You know, I mean, if he thinks he has to be a part of the game plan now that no Zeke is out there, right? Although actually now, what am I saying? People are going to fade Dez. People might have faded Dez when Zeke was playing. Now they're going to be like, oh, Dez all day, baby. Plenty of red zone, end zone work. He should be in a very good spot against Robert Alford. He's not bad, but the size advantage is just unbelievable. He's got 35 pounds on this man. 35 pounds and 5 inches. This is just an end zone situation. If they get in the red zone, this is a Dez go get it type situation, no doubt about it. Now, are they going to throw help at him because they know Alford is overmatched? Yes, fine. But I think that Dez is in an interesting spot, a little bit contrarian this week. Although now He was contrarian when I made these notes. He's not contrarian now that Zeke is out. Everybody's going to go, ooh, Dez. You got to like Golden Tate versus Cleveland, no doubt about it. 10 targets per game, one of the worst pass defenses in the league. Wide receiver 2 in target share. He's ideal. He is ideal for PPR sites, especially solid if Jason McCourty is, since Jason McCourty is back. Jason McCourty is going to go lock down Marvin Jones on the outside. And I think that Golden Tate just picks up a lot of that volume. You're going to see a lot less volume for Marvin Jones. You're going to see a lot more volume for Golden Tate out of the slot. So I love that. A couple value guys, and the 6K range is loaded. The 6.45K range is really, really nice. Robbie Anderson versus Tampa Bay, no problem with him. McCown should be able to succeed, and Anderson's his favorite wide receiver target. Now, Brent Grimes probably back. Who knows if he's going to guard him? I haven't really looked into that. You don't want to chase touchdowns either. I mean, you know, so rostering Robbie Anderson is fine, but it's kind of like, ooh, yikes. you know, it's a little nerve-wracking because he really never sees double-digit targets. He hasn't seen double-digit targets. So it's kind of like, do you want to pay $6,500 for a guy who's had a couple good touchdown games but won't see double-digit targets and definitely won't see 100 yards because they just don't – that's not the way this offense works. But this is a terrible pass defense. He's really cheap. You could definitely go there. But the other guy right there, there's two other guys right there. One is Juju. I mean, Juju Smith-Schuster versus Indianapolis. Just as bad of a pass defense. Problem is like the volume. I mean, you're going to forget this kid, but the volume question is real. You know, and everybody's going to be like, well, Martavis is back. It's just not going to be the same snap rate. It's just not the case. Well, he saw 70% of snaps no matter what. Even with Martavis out there, he just ran out of the slot, which is fine. If he goes runs out of the slot, I don't care. He's going to get Desir. Somebody I desire to play Juju Smith-Schuster against Mr. Desir. Yeah, I mean, he had almost a 70% snap rate before that. The problem is does he get the targets? Are some of these targets going to go possibly to Martavis? Are they going to go, you know, who knows how Pittsburgh, I'm really having a hard time scripting how Pittsburgh demolishes them and whether or not there's fantasy production because they just don't always score that many points when they're in positive game script. Kansas City, Cincinnati didn't score that many points. And you saw touchdowns for, you know, the core guys, but not a lot of points there. So, you know, this isn't the Rams. What a weird sentence to say. I mean, the Steelers, they're not the Rams, right? Am I right? Rams scoring 74 points a game. It's a basketball team. Sammy Watkins, speaking of the Rams versus Houston, the combination of Kevin Johnson and Kevin Jackson, what's his name? The other corner for Johnson and Jackson for Houston, they allow the most fantasy points per route. Sammy Watkins has the second best matchup on fantasy points per route, right next to against Kevin Johnson. They burned the Giants. They should burn the Texans. Texans' pass defense is terrible. We've seen the pass route, the deep pass route. Russell Wilson destroyed them. We know Jared Goff throws the ball deep. We know that they're comfortable throwing the ball deep. And in fact, let's go ahead and let's be very clear about what happens when you throw the ball deep or throw the ball against Houston. They are currently 22, 30, and 29 against the respective wide receiver 1, 2, and 3. So pick your poison when it comes to a wide receiver, okay? Pick your poison when it comes to a wide receiver. But I will say one thing that I really, really, really like. They have been terrible against deep routes. They have been terrible against deep routes, specifically against the middle of the field. Allowing some of the most production to deep middle routes in the NFL. So definitely an interesting spot here for Houston, literally 31st against the middle of the field and 24th in defending the deep ball, which is not good, Bob. But of course, Indianapolis is 27th. So, and then where's Tennessee? Tennessee, very good against the deep ball. They're good against the deep ball. Interesting. They're like the Philadelphia design. You start to realize that these teams design themselves a certain way to do certain things well and other things poorly. You know, they'll give certain things up and they will let, and they just schematically, they'll, you know, because you have these massive gaps. Like Baltimore, for example, this is really interesting. 28th against the deep ball, but first against short routes on the left. You know, I mean, it's just, they clearly have made a choice. They've clearly made a choice in the way that they are going to defend. Oakland just bad against everything. Gosh, I wish Oakland was on this slate. They're, guys, just down the stretch, just we're targeting Oakland in all formats at all times. They're terrible. So Sammy Watkins is interesting, but so is Cooper Kupp, so is Robert Woods. And Cooper Kupp and Robert Woods are cheaper, and they've been seeing more targets. It's just Sammy has this just ceiling. He has one play ceiling that you're just like, oh, he hit value. You know, home run ball, no doubt about it. Mohamed Sanu versus Dallas, very consistent target share. Went down a little bit last week, but you can expect that. Good pass defense. He's been getting in the end zone, and in the red zone, Matt Ryan looks for him, no doubt about it. So you got to like this matchup that he has here. He's been very consistent. He's cheap. He's been hitting value. You like the consistency out of a cheap wide receiver there. I mentioned Cooper Kupp. Cooper Kupp actually has one of the best matchup advantages in Houston. He 5-6 targets a game. We could definitely see him have a really nice thing here. You know, we saw T.Y. Hilton out of the slot. Cooper Kupp could absolutely do the exact same thing. And he is the cheapest of the three Houston wide receivers. So no problem with Cooper Kupp in this one. Sterling Shepard, too, another nice slot receiver against San Francisco. No issue with him. I think he is going to be in a great spot. He's a primary target as a wide receiver. Evan Engram has been great, of course, sure. But you're going to need to throw the ball to your wide receiver. He had 8 targets against L.A. He just wasn't able to catch any of them. Not going to be the same against San Francisco. A bunch of rookie guys in the secondary. They're allowing plenty of pass production. So certainly an interesting spot for Sterling Shepard. Very, very cheap leading wide receiver target for that team. And we know if he gets going, you know, the yards after the catch for Sterling Shepard, certainly very, very interesting. Looking at San Francisco's numbers against wide receiver, they don't grade above 24 against any of the wide receivers. And as far as just their pass defense. And, you know, Jaquiski Tartt, by the way, is down. He was their guy guarding. He was their guy who was guarding the linebackers or the tight ends. So Evan Engram is interesting. Just he's really expensive. I don't really know if I want to pay that for him. So don't mind Sterling Shepard at all in this situation. I think probably prefer Cooper Kupp, maybe. Just from my offense, attaching myself to a much more productive offense at home. I think that I like. Martavis, tournament, I just got to say it. I mean, if he comes back, he's got a good matchup. If he gets targets, he could destroy Indianapolis here. No doubt about it. I don't know. I don't know if he's going to get snaps. I don't know if he's going to get targets. But it's an interesting spot for one of the best deep threats in the league. He's still got speed. You know, the speed doesn't quit. The other guy is Kendall Wright. Kendall Wright, I mean, I talked about this against New Orleans. He had almost 8 targets. Green Bay allows massive production to the wide receiver one. Mitch Trubisky had an extra week of practices, bye week. You have no Zach Miller. Kendall Wright should be in an interesting spot. Now, what's his ceiling? I have no idea. His ceiling in a Mitch Trubisky offense, 6 receptions, 64 yards. That's a big game. That's a big game for a Bears wide receiver. Now, don't sneeze at that. Tight end, pretty obvious. Gronkalator, the Gronkmeister, he's 8K. The question is do you want to pay for an 8K wide receiver or do you want to pay for Gronk? Because it's interesting. I mean, you could literally just be like, okay, I'm going to pay for Gronk, expect that he scores as much as AJ Green, and I'm not going to play AJ Green. And instead of playing Cameron Brate at 5,700, I'm going to play Cooper Kupp. That's interesting. Pretty interesting way to approach it, don't you think? Chris Hogan's not going to play. Biggest red zone target as far as wide receivers go. Interesting. And let's just take a look at what Mr. Gronkalator has done. I just wish you could type in Gronk to look up his game logs. I can't. You can't. You got to type in Gronkowski. Previous games versus Denver. Touchdown in all of them. Mm-hmm. 7 for 90 and a touchdown, 9 for 105 and a touchdown, 6 for 88 and a touchdown. Never lower than 20 PPR DraftKings points, never lower than 14.8 standard points, which would put him at, FanDuel points is like 18, almost 20. That seems kind of fun. That's an interesting strategy. And in fact, if you do that, then, yeah, I mean, you're basically just saying, like, okay, well, I'm not going to play Julio. I will play a $5,400 wide receiver instead of Julio. And I'll play, Cooper Kupp. You trade out, you go to an elite tight end, and you trade out the same price point that you would pay down at tight end for, right? I mean, strategically, it's not the end of, that's not that big of a deal. I mean, Gronk has one of the biggest ceilings for a pass catcher on this slate. And the reality is in good matchups, there's who's going to guard him? who is going to guard him? Who is going to guard him? He has a 2-touchdown upside. So very interesting idea for Gronk here. I think it's maybe worth it. Evan Ingram, similar, but not quite the same. San Francisco schematically has been very good. Jaquiski Tartt has been really good against tight ends, but man, he gets so many targets. The kid has just been an absolute monster, just smashing that rookie tight end narrative. It's just the case. I mean, that's what he does. So $7,400, though, for him is a very hard price to pay. I don't think Ingram falls into the Gronk bucket for me. It's not quite the same. Now, the other guys on the lower end, two guys, Kyle Rudolph, man, $5,400. Now, the only thing I don't love about Kyle Rudolph's matchup is that Stephon Diggs is back. He's going to see fewer targets, but he could still see the red zone targets, which I like. But we've talked about, it's hard to project what he's going to do. He hasn't been that much of a target monster. I don't mind Vernon Davis on the opposite side of that ball against a good pass rush. I saw this an interesting PFF stat against a good pass rush. Vernon Davis is Kirk Cousins' favorite target, so he will probably be in there again, $5,300 versus Minnesota. And Cameron Brate versus the Jets. The Jets allow actually a pretty good amount of production to the tight end, no doubt about it. So Cameron Brate will probably end up being one of Ryan Fitzmagic's favorite targets. So I have no problem with Cameronia there. Eric Ebron death train. Do you want to get on it? Punch your ticket and then just close your eyes. Just close your eyes and pretend that it's not happening. Just pretend that you didn't do it and just hope for touchdowns. That's all you got. Okay. That's all I can say about that. Okay. That's all I can say about Cameron or Eric Ebron. Defense. Oh, is it worth paying up for defense this week? The Rams defense is in a very, very, very interesting spot here. And the Minnesota defense. Those are the two that if I'm paying up, those are the two that I'm going to. They're healthy. They have great pass rushes. They're in a good spot. I think the Rams and the Vikings are the ones that I want to go if I'm going to pay up. If I'm going down, baby, I'm going to the Bears. At home, off the bye, they have been able to create touchdowns, even against New Orleans. Even against New Orleans, they had 7 fantasy points. Against Minnesota, they had 7 fantasy points. Against Baltimore and Carolina, they were 2 of the leading scorers. I mean, so if you have a bad quarterback, this team has been trending in the right direction against bad offenses. They have not allowed more in the month of October, they did not allow more than 20 points. So that's pretty good. And they have 3 defensive touchdowns. So, I'm not necessarily scared of Brett Hundley in this situation, especially now that Brian Bulaga is down. Rest in peace, Brian Bulaga, and season any injury to the knee. So I think it's a really good spot for that. So I don't mind the Bears as a cheap one. Kicker, yeah. I mean, if you want to pay above 5K, there's a million. I mean, go to Greg the Leg or Matt Prater. No doubt about it. Those guys are great. Love them. I mean, Greg the Leg is just an animal. You know, I mean, it's like buying a nice wide receiver. Like, I mean, give me, what the fuck? 17 points in both of his last 2 games. Like, honestly, like, go to a $5,400 wide receiver. And if I told you that Cole Beasley was going to score 17 points this week, you would throw every dollar you have on Cole Beasley. That's the weird thing is Greg Zuerlein is that useful. He can be that useful. So do you want to pay up? You know, you pay up for tight end, you pay up for kicker this week, just be a total weirdo and just say, you know what? I understand that everybody thinks this is a bad idea, but I disagree. I'm doing it anyway. I don't mind it. Why would you mind it? It's, you know, you have enough value on this slate. There's so much running back value on this slate that you could do it. It's just a question of who do you trust? Who do you trust to get into the end zone as far as your running backs are concerned? All right, guys. Hey, listen, that is it for me. I'm going to go. I'm going to go work on some basketball stuff. Basketball show coming up tonight. Sorry, this one is long, but check out the basketball show if you haven't played NBA DFS. It's really fun. And thank you. I love you.